Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
A very good evening this Friday evening, wherever you are in the world. You're very welcome along to Friday Night's Off the Ball. We've got a very good show for you lined up. A little bit later, we're going to spend some time in the inimitable company of Johnny Murtagh, one of the greatest jockeys that the world has ever seen and one of the most positive guests that we ever have on the show. Absolutely delighted to have him with us in studio for Friday Night Racing. There's a special version of the Crappy Quiz coming your way a little bit later on as well. Before all that, we're going to go to Gibraltar and join Nathan. And before that, I have a little piece of paper that... how are you doing, Nathan? You're looking very well there.
All good.
A good journalist is always prepared, Nathan, right?
Correct.
How prepared are
Why
you?
Why do you say this?
Well, I'm just saying that, like, Nathan's on the phone to us going, look, we've got to do this quick and it's got to be short because I only have 10% battery left. I'm opening the curtain here on why we're not able
Why
to...
Why are you speaking so slowly?
What's it down to now? 7%?
I can't see, so it's just randomly going to disappear at
some
stage.
A bit like, unfortunately, the career of Johnny Walters. We had hoped that he was going to come back and have another go at life in the Premier League and another go at life with the Republic of Ireland. But unfortunately today, he's announced his retirement immediately from all football.
Yeah, it's a real shame because obviously John has been doing a bit of work with us and Off the Ball over the last few months. And he's been talking about how hard he's been working in the gym. Was able to do very little leg work in the last sort of 3-4 months, but was trying to get himself back to a position where I think he could force himself back into the Irish reckoning. I would say that his best hope was probably get a move to a championship club next year, but maybe, just maybe, could force his way into a Euro 2020 squad if Ireland get there, because he's such a good character. And that's the one thing everyone talks about when they speak of John Walters, is his character and what a presence he was in the dressing room. So it's a huge loss. In that sense, and obviously I think when you think back to Euro 2016 and how key he was there on the football pitch as well, he probably felt he still had something to offer. But to have it ended like this, just randomly on a Friday evening, the news breaking is a bit surprising, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part about this, is that we didn't get to see him do it on his own terms. And I know a lot of football careers don't end that way. A lot of football careers don't end with the big show at the Aviva or a testimonial or anything like that. Most football careers end with a fairly muted press release. But like, there was such vibrancy and such energy and such commitment to the John Walters experience that not having that as part of our lives anymore is kind of sad for football fans.
Yeah, he was everything I think an Irish football fan wanted, because he put his body on the line. He was a man who, when the going got tough, he dragged Ireland through in games. Particularly, I think back to a couple of the matches against Austria, the crucial draw at the Aviva, where he really should have had a winner as well that was wrongly disallowed. But that was just sheer force of will. Put himself around the place, made himself an absolute nightmare to defend against. And the real shame, probably, when you look back in his career, was that when he went to Euro 2016, he wasn't fit. And he still played the games, he still went out there, but like, his game was all about energy, all about being a pain in the ass for defenders. And he wasn't able to do that. He was a shadow of his normal self. So that's probably the one regret. But like, his role in getting there and the goals against Bosnia in particular and that night at the Aviva, I don't think he'll ever be forgotten. And remember, he didn't make his Ireland debut till he was 27 and appeared over 50 times for his country in the end. It's a remarkable story, really.
Yeah, I didn't realise he was that old before he actually ended up playing for Ireland for the very first time. The point you make about the Euros and him not being fit, like, I really feel like we would have been a much better team if we'd had the Jonathan Walters from that qualifying campaign, where it seemed like he was actually fully, finally understanding exactly what his role in the team was and maximising all of the talents that were available to him. And, you know, just checking Twitter at the moment and the tweets are flying out from an outpouring. Because it's not that he was the best footballer we ever had, but he's right up there in terms of the most committed.
Well, exactly, and particularly with the conversations that are going on around Irish football for the last year about players' commitment. Like, John Walters laid and left everything out there when it came to playing for Ireland. And luckily, he's told his story and have spending his summers in Ireland and his relationship with the country and just how deep-rooted his love for Ireland is. And we want that. Irish supporters love that from their players. People who are committed, people who spill blood for their country. It's why people love James McLean. It's why they love John Walters on the other side. And the thing is, when you see John Walters on television, you always think he should be about 6'3". He's such a big physical presence, but he's not. But he's such a brilliant lead, and he has such a fearlessness when it came to going up against centre halves that he always he always appeared as though he was a greater force than maybe he actually physically was, because he just didn't seem to care. He was probably a little bit reckless with his body. He would just throw himself into absolutely anything for the good of his team or for the good of his country. And as you say, I think you just have to look online at the tributes from supporters, from journalists, and particularly from people who've played with him at club and country, to see how well liked he is. Because you hear that he was a brilliant trainer, somebody who, again, you know, didn't sit back at training, somebody who pushed other people at training. And he's definitely a loss, because I would have imagined Mick McCarthy would like to have had him in and around the squad even, if he wasn't a starter for this campaign.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, you've just come from a Mick McCarthy press conference where it's been confirmed that he's not going to do something very silly. He is actually going to play Seamus Coleman from the start. Seamus Coleman will captain the Republic of Ireland. You presume that Seamus Coleman is now our captain and will start wherever he starts for Ireland throughout the duration of this campaign.
Yeah, Mick McCarthy, I think, made that pretty much clear, because initially he said, when he was asked about Seamus Coleman, will he captain tomorrow? And he said, if he plays, he's my captain. And then about 30 seconds later, he said, and he's going to play. So he confirmed that. It would have been madness. I thought, even when people felt Seamus Coleman was having a slight dip, to suggest that he wouldn't be in the team was just ridiculous. Because you look at the level he's playing at in the Premier League compared to some of the players that people think might have replaced him. It just didn't make any sense. And his performance level over the last month has been right back up there again. What he's going to do in terms of, people were trying to find various different ways of getting out of Mick, what he might be thinking, and would he be willing to play players out of position? He said, well, I can tell what you're doing with this question. I won't play players too far out of position. They will have played there in their career previously, essentially, was the answer. So, you know, leaving open, Matt Doherty could play left back or maybe play on the right side of midfield. The couple of other bits that you might read into sounded as though Robbie Brady may not be in his starting team. He was asked about Robbie Brady's fitness and whether he'd have any concerns about his lack of game time. Said that, look, he has shown enough that he can definitely make a contribution, but he hasn't been starting games of late, and sort of just left that pause there to linger, which would suggest that maybe he doesn't feel that Robbie Brady is ready to play the 90 minutes tomorrow. Seanie Maguire, again, you know, I think he's looking at that and probably siding with going to play him tomorrow, and thinking about the Georgia game and worrying about the Georgia game after that. But even then, we're still reading into things. He did mention, when I asked him about his potential team news for tomorrow, had he told the team yet, and said he was a little bit worried about leaks in the camp.
Oh, yeah, go on.
He said, well, maybe I'll just email the players when they're asleep tonight, because, you know, you guys, you've got friends, you know, maybe you'll be getting on to Kevin Kilbane. He'll be telling you what the team is.
I mean, does Kevin know the team and he's not telling us?
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm wondering.
Kevin already knows the team.
This is clearly what it is, but he just hasn't bothered to fill us in.
Well, that's not much fun, is it?
No. Where's the loyalty? But he was very relaxed. God, the change in atmosphere in this press conference compared to what we had for the last 6 months, year of the Martin O'Neill era, where it felt like it could kick off at any second. You know, Mick is in his comfort zone when he's in a room like this.
Yeah. Explain that change. What difference does it make? I've heard that it's a happier training ground. Like, does this translate into better performances? Is that what we're actually saying, that happy players will be better players?
Well, you would imagine so. That would make perfect sense, that players who are happier play better. And I think we have to realise as well just how toxic the atmosphere had got in those final 6 months, when all the fallout from Roy Keane's rows, there's no way that doesn't have an influence on players and maybe make them go into their shell a little bit and play like they've got a straitjacket on, which is exactly what we saw over the last while. So everybody's had a big smile on their face. The players in the press conferences have all spoken about the positivity that is around. And we see this all the time. Like, this feels, because of the sort of 18-month job that Mick McCarthy has, this feels like a manager coming in with his team down in the dumps. They're fighting for survival. He's got 8 games to keep them in the league. And he just sort of has that Midas touch that everybody goes, all right, this guy's done it before. He can get us up. He can get the job done. Now, he has to go out tomorrow, and he's acknowledged that, you know, 6 points here is what you need. You need all this momentum very early on. And, you know, we can pull the curtain back again. You know, we did record a piece earlier on, which we couldn't record now because the team are actually out playing, where we had the rock beautifully in the background and all that. And you would have seen then the wind that is here in Gibraltar. And if anything, they're saying that the wind is going to be even stronger tomorrow, that there's weather warnings out and it is blowing an absolute gale. The corner flags are pretty much sideways at this stage. So that's another factor. They, on the watering the pitch, which we noticed earlier on, they were watering the plastic pitch.
Why?
That's something they want done. That's something Mick McCarthy wants done.
Why?
Make the surface a little bit more slick. I think otherwise it just gets very dry and maybe it's a bit harder to run on, I presume.
Is it harder? I don't understand the whole... Is there a science behind this more than a psychology?
I'd imagine there's plenty of science behind behind this. People spend... Talk to Kieran Donaghy about it next time he's in.
Yeah, okay, I will. Watering...
Somebody who actually knows the science.
Yeah, okay, but their pitches seem to be really good pitches, and this pitch doesn't seem to be anything that they would be ever associated with. This seems to be... Everybody's complained about the one at Gibraltar. So it's interesting that it's being watered at our request, you seem to be suggesting, or certainly we're happy with the fact that they're doing it, and the weather is awful. All of this is leading to some weird nil-all draw here, Nathan, where, you know, like...
No, I don't think so. What it could lead to is some sort of freakish start to the game where something bizarre happens, but over the 90 minutes, the gulf in class is going to show, and Ireland will win this game comfortably.
You're very confident. A 3-5
It's Gibraltar, Chair. Gibraltar.
Well, how bad
are
they?
It's the one time you're allowed to be confident.
Grand. Okay, well, explain how bad they are, because I'd say, you know, like, they're lumped in a group in people's minds with a load of other crappy teams who make up the bottom feeders at all of the qualifying tournaments. Are they any different from the Faroe Islands or from Liechtenstein or, you know, Cyprus back in the day? Cyprus won 5-0 last night, by the way. I wonder, have they scored 5 goals in an international since?
Yeah, well, they did win a couple of games in the Nations League. Obviously, the Nations League was a big boost to countries like Gibraltar because they got to play teams at their level and they got a victory over Armenia during that run. But their last home game here was a 6-2 defeat against Armenia. Now, they did score the first goal in that game, so they are improving and that will give them a little bit more confidence. Danny Higginbottom was interesting when he was on the show during the week, who obviously played a few games for Gibraltar, of the naivety at times of the Gibraltar players, of not, when you go a goal down, of just thinking, all right, let's just keep it at this and maybe we can nick one at some stage. They go gung-ho, try and force their way back into the game. I think maybe there's a realisation and an understanding now of how international football works, that they're not going to let that happen. But they did still get absolutely hammered by Belgium twice in the last game. Now, we're not of the calibre of Belgium. So they have it in them to concede a lot of goals. They're improving, but they're not improving fast enough that they should be able to really get near Ireland tomorrow.
Okay, so the good news is that they do try and come out and play a bit of football or at least score, which is going to leave them open at the back. So we will. So 5-1, is that what you're saying? I'm trying to drag a prediction out of here from here. What's going on?
4-0.
Okay, 4-0. Everybody's going to be happy with that.
4-0 was the score of the last time Ireland played Gibraltar, in Portugal. Robbie got two. Over the course of the two games, Ireland scored... Was it 11 goals and Robbie scored 5 of them?
Yeah, we've got no Robbie this time, so who knows what's going to happen. Are you of a mind that Seanan Maguire needs to start this game? Or are you of the let's protect the guy who hasn't actually scored for Ireland yet for the big game against Georgia in 3 nights' time?
No, I'm of the mind of you start him tomorrow and you hope that he takes his chance and he gets his international goals and suddenly he's heading into the game against Georgia buzzing. Like, screw Preston. Screw what state he goes back to Preston in. We want him in top form, feeling that he can do it and knowing that he can do it. And rather than going into that game thinking, well, I've played, what, 4 international games. I'm still waiting for my first goal and people are still talking about Robbie Keane and I'm the heir apparent, even though I have yet to do anything of that calibre. So I think he'd go out tomorrow and hope, firstly, that he comes through again, but also that he gets a couple of chances. Remember, he scored last weekend for Preston in the 90th minute. He seems full of confidence. He's talking a good game. I think this is the match you want him out there.
Yeah, okay. So were there any other indications from Kev or anybody about what the team might be? Centre-back partnership?
No, I think the point in Kilbane was he's not letting it out in case Kilbane does release it to everybody else.
Right.
I don't know if he's been bitten with this once already.
What happened?
Very harsh on Kev.
What's going on? Is there like some little bit of backstory here that we haven't managed to drag out into the light that, you know, well... You know, we'll get the story from Kev's side at some point in the future, and we'll get to ask Mick McCarthy what
sure.
The story is. Well, Nathan, any plans for this evening in, you know, lovely English Spain?
Well, lovely English, Spain. Yeah, I'm actually saying in actual, real Spain.
Good for you.
Just about 50 metres away
as
across
a Brexit,
the border.
Brexit protest.
Exactly. That and the fact that they lied to me on the booking website where I thought I booked in Gibraltar and it ended up being on the other side of the border. But it really makes no difference because it's 50 metres away. We've actually been invited to go for drinks by the head of the Gibraltar government.
All right. Is he like a prime minister type dude or is he like just a, you know...
I think he's been turning up at some of the proper Brexit negotiations over the past couple of weeks.
Well, you'd want to,
obviously,
wouldn't you?
They're going to be they're going to be seriously affected. So if I get any breaking news, Jer, I'll be sure to relay it.
Yeah, tweet it out. Enjoy the Frère Roche this evening, Nathan, and obviously we'll be listening
to you
live on Off the Ball tomorrow. It's Gibraltar against the Republic of Ireland tomorrow evening, and we'll know that team in the next while, or in about 24 hours' time, and we will obviously tweet that out on all of our social accounts. All right, good stuff, Nathan. Thanks very much for that.
Sure,
very quickly before we go, next Wednesday, the 27th of March, we're going to be live from the Olympia for the very first Off the Ball Road Show of the year in association with Heineken Rugby Club. It's already nearly completely sold out. Three Irish provinces obviously fighting it out for four Heineken Champions Cup semi-final positions. We're going to preview all the action with the man who led Leinster to glory in the year 2009. It's the current Australia coach, Michael Checa, who's going to be joining Joe, Keith Wood, Stephen Ferris, Shane Jennings and Malcolm O'Kelly. On the night, one lucky audience member will win themselves a trip to the Heineken Champions Cup final. Just bring your best rugby story and jump in the famous green chair to be with a chance to win. So when you get there, head over straight to the green chair, make yourself known. Tell the guys there that you've got a brilliant story, and one lucky audience member will win themselves a trip to the Heineken Champions Cup final this year to hopefully see what could be a very, very good game. Go ahead on to our website, offtheball.com/events, to get your tickets now. So offtheball.com/events to get your tickets, and they're nearly all gone, so get on there pretty quick. It's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow. It's next Wednesday, the 27th, at the Olympia, and it's all thanks to Heineken Rugby Club. The Crappy Quiz is up next. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.